Jim Sherry is an activist and lawyer who joins us from London. Also joining us is Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria, who joins us from Manchester.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Kim Sharif, I'll start with you with another horrific set of data from the massacres that's taken place, four of them in the past 24 hours is what we have. Our correspondent on the ground has supported that, killing at least what we have, 81 civilians. The regime ramping up its brutal aggression in the Gaza Strip over the past 24 hours. What is your reaction to how we are still witnessing a genocide and the fact that you have some who are denying that a genocide is taking place?
Well, good evening to you both. Well, firstly, those who are denying the genocide have a political purpose for saying that, for doing that, because it is their agenda, it is their objective for the existence and continuation of this illegal entity that is sitting there, despite the fact that it has no right to be there. In fact, from ab initio, as I have said before, the Balfour Declaration was illegally handed over to the Zionists. And you need to listen to the presentations made by the Arab League barrister at the International Criminal Court, International Court of Justice, where he sends out the details of why this entity is illegal. And you can also, you need to go back in history as well and see how colonies have been made, like, for example, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, where massacres have been committed sustainably and consistently and without any mercy on the natives. The same policy has been imported to the Palestinians, unfortunately, who have been suffering a Holocaust for the past 76 years, and it's ongoing. The horrific crimes being committed in Palestine today is a very, very dirty scar on the conscience of humanity. And those who are genocide deniers, they have a political reason for doing that, and they are known to be liars, non-compliant with international rules of law, non-compliant with international rules of engagement on any level. It's all about bullying and might is right, and complete and utter disregard to everything that we know as conscientiousness.
All right, Peter Ford, I need to ask you about these banned weapons reports that we are now hearing about more than before. One particular report indicating 320 cases of severe burns within 48 hours. This came from Gaza officials who are condemning the use of these banned weapons, courtesy of the USA. And what we understand, it's basically third-degree burns that are showing up, thermal weapons or chemical weapons, the source causing a chemical reaction with the skin, leads to chemical erosion of tissues, resulting in deadly burns within 27 hours or less. We heard these stories in one of the other wars also, Israeli wars that it had waged on the Gaza Strip. But this shouldn't be happening, should it?
Of course not. The scenes that we see from Gaza are heart-rending. It's almost impossible to watch. And this is partly because, as you mentioned, of the use of phosphorus bombs. These bombs that we're talking about almost certainly are phosphorus bombs, which are illegal under international law. They have certain uses which are allowed, but dropping them on people is definitely not allowed. But Israel has no care about international law. And frankly, we are wasting our time talking about international law here, because it's water off a duck's back. Israel, with its protection from the United States, laps at international law. And the international community is powerless against Israel as long as it's protected by America. In the end, what counts is the steadfastness, the determination, the courage of the people of Gaza, and the military efforts of the resistance. That is all that counts.
Well, we are also seeing the Israeli regime suffering, Kim Sharif. And let's look at some of those ways, some of the ways that they are. Reports of shortages of tanks and ammunition have been cited by many sources, insufficient for the onslaught. Shortages are such so that it's going to prevent this war from continuing, as they call it, the genocidal war. And you have even the Supreme Court that has been informed there in Israel of this because of so many tanks that were damaged. What are we looking at when it comes to this type of shortage and the fact that Israel is experiencing that? Are we looking at how the resistance is actually succeeding against the regime?
Well, of course it is. And the resistance action is a direct response to the failure of the world powers in upholding the rule of law. And therefore, if they say that might is right, so be it. The resistance forces have been taking steps to attack and defend the people of Palestine with all their might, even those who can't even actually afford to do that. For people like the Yemenis and the Lebanese and the Iraqis have been attacking. And as far as I'm aware, where Port of Eilat has been rendered bankrupt, and a lot of ships are having now to go via Africa to avoid the Red Sea Ansar Allah military operations. And of course, you know, if you say that you're going to apply one rule to one set of people and another rule to other or the rest of the world, then it means the rest of the world will have to get together and do something about it. And that's what the resistance is doing, and that's what is having an impact. What is unfortunate is that there is a need, an urgent need, for more countries to take urgent steps to boycott this vile regime, economically sanction it, close down its shops, its embassies in their countries, cut ties with it, and it really needs to be to feel the impact more severely, because I have said before, I estimate that at least 500 people are being killed per day. I don't have figures to back that up. That is because the Zionist regime does not allow independent investigators from the UN, journalists and other people to come and do the figures. And the figures given by the Gaza Health Ministry is commonly dismissed as the Hamas figures, in order to play it down and make it seem like, you know, that's not true. Mm-hmm. The horror that is taking place in there is affecting us all. We are all being traumatized. The whole world is against
sure.
it. It's only very few countries with power who are upholding it, and they need to be held to account also.
Sure. There was, since you've talked about how you don't have facts to back up with the figures you mentioned there, I'd like to ask you, Peter Ford, about this Lancet report that came out. It's about, I think, a couple of weeks old at this point. We're up to 180,000 may die as a result of this onslaught, to exceed 186,000, actually. And it found factors like diseases to lead to many more indirect deaths in the long run. And, of course, we're talking about, in addition to the so many thousands that are under the rubble. So that's a pretty big figure in a matter of 9 months. I think that is the largest figure in modern-day warfare, in terms of a war that has happened, to have so many lives lost. I mean, the Yemen war, I think, was 250,000 or so, if I'm not mistaken. It could be higher, but given the nine-month period, as opposed to the 9 years, and I'm just citing one example, the Yemen war, that's a pretty shocking figure.
Indeed, this report published in the Lancet magazine in London, a very prestigious medical magazine, it had a lot of coverage in the Western media because, of course, the finding that about 10% of the population of Gaza is either dead or dying is quite dramatic, and it's bound to have some impact. It will play into a debate which is now beginning to open up in Britain about banning arms sales to Israel. This subject is becoming a hot potato right now with a new Labour government in place, which promised to publish the legal advice that its own legal, that the government's legal experts were giving during the time of the previous administration. Now that advice, almost certainly, it was concealed, but now it will have to be published. That advice almost certainly said that killing 10% of Gaza's population with British weapons is not legal. And the new British government will be under immense pressure now to ban arms sales to Israel.
All right. You mentioned the port of Eilat there, Kim Sharif, if I'm not mistaken. The port of Eilat, in essence, has claimed bankruptcy, from what we understand, based on the report, at least, that I'm looking at. This came after months, obviously, of what we have seen to be the effective and successful Ansarullah blockade and attacks on Israeli-bound ships and vessels. At the same time, another report came out just days ago where it talked about how 46,000 Israeli businesses have been forced to shut down as a result of this onslaught, predicted to increase to 60,000 by the end of 2024. So Israel is suffering. We've talked so much about how the Gazans are suffering, but at the same time, Israel, out of its own doing, is doing something that is rupturing from within. 60,000 by the end of the year, businesses to be shut down. That's a lot. Do you think that Israel cares about the fact that it's going down a path that's leading to its destruction with the aim that it has of eliminating some Hamas leaders, perhaps, which is their goal, which they have not been able to do? In other words, is the cost worth it, that it may lead down to its destruction?
Well, absolutely not. Any sensible people, any sensible country will come to the conclusion that this is a non-starter, and what is in our best interest is to behave like normal human beings and show some civility. But they have failed to do that. The thing is, it seems to me that those who are backing it are the ones who are encouraging it and wanting it to continue. If you recall that the war on Yemen itself, the Yemenis were saying, Ansarullah were saying for a number of years that the aggression against them was in order to protect the Zionist regime because of that Red Sea crossing, clearly. And now that what they have been saying for years has materialized, in fact. And so the destiny of the Yemenis is very closely tied with the destiny of the Palestinians, hence the involvement of Ansarullah in this scenario. And Ansarullah and Hezbollah and all the other resistance partners have made it very clear. As soon as the Zionist regime stops its campaign of extermination and genocide against the people of Palestine, they will also stop their attacks. So long as the military operation, the genocidal operation continues against the people of Palestine, they will continue. At the end of the day, it is very clear that not only have they lost financially, and they will continue to lose, I have no doubt in my mind, there will be much more greater losses for them that they will never be able to recoup. And that is a loss of reputation. The Zionist regime's mask of civilization, of democracy, of human rights, of all the things that we all love and cherish, has now been unmasked. You know, they have now become, unfortunately, the very people that they had been running away from after the Second World War. They have started, they've been doing crimes perhaps worse than the crimes of those people.
Right.
People who say this are often attacked and told they are anti-Semite. On the contrary, I listened to the lectures and discussions of many great, respectable Jewish people who are saying exactly the same thing. Norm Finkelstein, Andrew Finstein, and Ilan Pape, a lot of these people are saying what I am saying. So it's not anti-Semite to say that these people are behaving worse than the Nazis.
Well, Peter Ford, let's take a look at what Israel, the regime, is facing and what it's involved in. Basically, if I'm correct, we are looking at how it is involved in four fronts. One is the Ansarallah movement, the army, in essence, where it is now also conducting, as we're seeing, more joint raids with Iraq's Islamic Resistance, for example, targeting Haifa Port. We also know that it's involved with Hezbollah, the skirmishes that are happening on a daily basis for quite some time, obviously with the resistance there in the Gaza Strip, and also from time and again, though not as often, the Palestinian resistance groups inside the occupied territories. We can mention the Lion's Den. Why is it that Israel feels that it can actually sustain all these fronts unless it's a miscalculation because they haven't all acted against Israel at the same time?
Well, we have to remind ourselves that the main reason this war is continuing is simply Netanyahu, the political future of one man, and his wish to stay out of jail, because it's very likely when the war ends that he will be held accountable for all Israel's failures and will go, as well as for corruption, and will go to jail. Therefore, the question has to be, is Israeli public opinion agreeing with Netanyahu? And I'm sorry to say, it is. The Israeli public is not feeling enough pain, despite the economic and security problems that have been mentioned. The Israeli public is not feeling enough pain. The pain in Israel cannot be compared in any way to the pain the people of Gaza are feeling. And therefore, the government of Israel under Netanyahu feels able to continue to sustain this low-intensity conflict. It's not like the bombs were raining down on Haifa. Not yet, anyway. And this, I'm afraid that Netanyahu can continue to hold this balance for quite some time.
Okay. Let me ask you, Kim Sheriff, about another slow motion, violation that's taking place, and that's in the occupied West Bank. We are witnessing so far over 500 deaths and an awful number of Palestinians who have been detained, about 9,600. We're looking at almost 10,000 of them. And, of course, this is a result of the raids that are happening, along with the violence that erupts. What are we looking at when it comes to the occupied West Bank itself, Kim Sharif? What are we looking at that to increase as time is going on, which obviously is on that track?
Highly likely. I mean, what's happening in the West Bank and the conditions and the treatment of the detainees is just unspeakable horror. I mean, the raids, that the way they carry out the raids, the IOF is absolutely abominable. It's demonic. I mean, today I was listening to Middle East Eye about the case of a Down syndrome young man who had dogs unleashed on him, and the dogs mauled him to death in front of his family. A Down syndrome young man. And then you have the case of Hind, of course, the six-year-old who had hundreds of bullets thrown at her. This is the way the IOF behaved towards the Palestinian people, whether in the West Bank or the Gaza. And in detention, they get tortured in such ways that is so horrible even to try and relate, because I feel emotionally traumatized just listening to their cases. It's disgraceful that human beings in the world think that it is okay to aid and abet the crimes, the horrific crimes of this horrific criminal regime. Yes, the detainees in their centers, they get tortured by being beaten in their genitalia. Some of them have problems continuing. And every human rights organization that seek to defend them or speak up for them is instantly accused of being a terrorist and banned and harassed and hounded. Lawyers and non-lawyers and medicals, journalists, either killed or accused of being terrorists and so forth. It's disgraceful. I am really shocked. I am really shocked to be alive today in this world today,
sure,
to be witnessing these horrific crimes, to be honest.
Indeed. Well, Peter Ford, I'd like to draw your attention to an announcement that the U.S. made. This happened, an announcement that was actually made in the course of 3 days repeatedly, but the U.S. said that it will now reactivate sending the bombs to Israel, 500-pound bombs that have been held up since May. It said it was over the concerns of the Israeli regime invading Rafah, if you recall that. Now, when that announcement was made, just about 3 or 4 days later, you had that tragedy happen at the Al-Mawasi area, which is supposed to be the humanitarian zone. You had over 90 that were killed. And one of the bombs, the types of bombs that were found there is the JDAM, it's called, which comes into either 1,000 or 2,000 pound weight, 450 to 900 kilograms payload. And it was said the fragment is compatible with the BLU-109 bunker buster warhead also. So my point being is if that's a result, what happened at that camp, then that's really truly shocking. And if it's not, it's still the question being, how could the U.S. Allow this shipment to take place? And how is it that there's any logic behind using these 500-pound or 1,000-pound bombs? They flatten entire neighborhoods.
The United States cannot say no to Israel. It's important to understand the power relationship here. The power is with Israel, not with the United States. The United States, because of the way the Israelis control Congress, obeys Israel. That's the direction of power. The United States is not able, or the U.S. administration is not able for any long period of time to deny any Israeli request. But sometimes they go through the motions, they pretend to be putting pressure on Israel, but it never lasts, and their bluff is always called. We will remember that the Americans said no entry into Rafah by the Israeli army can be permitted. Well, what did Israel do? The army walked straight into Rafah, and what did America do? Nothing. And this is now being quietly forgotten. The ultimatum to Israel was a bluff. And it's the same with the temporary denial of these very heavy bombs. And this is not going to change.
All right. Thank you for that. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria. Thank you. And Kim Sheriff, activist and lawyer from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tahoe and the team, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful. who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarsi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, we have reached the 56th verse of chapter Naml. Let's listen to this verse.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
فَمَا كَانَ جَوَابَ قَوْمِهِ إِلَّا أَن قَالُوا إنهم أناس يتطهرون.
But the answer of his people was not except that they said, Expel the family of Lot from your city. Indeed, they are people who keep themselves pure.
So in this verse, dear listeners, we see that the people of Lot actually are trying to answer their prophet. فَمَا كَانَ جَوَابَ قَوْمِهِ إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا أخرجوا آل لوط من قريتكم إنهم أناس يتطهرون. But the answer of his people was nothing except they said, أخرجوا آل لوط من قريتكم. Drive out the people of Lut from your city. إنهم أناس يتطهرون. Verily, they are the people who seek to be pure. So, as you were with us in the previous episode, we mentioned the story of the people of Lut. So, those people were the kinds of ones that actually committed indecency and sodomy before the public eyes. And this is their situation. So they were, as the Holy Quran said, they were a people that were ignorant. قَوْمٌ تَجْهَلُونَ, the Holy Quran said. Now, how did they answer? How did they actually refer back to their prophet? How did they answer back to their prophet when he invited them to purity? They said nothing except drive out the people of Lut from your city. Why? إِنَّهُمْ أُنَاسٌ يَتَطَهَّرُونَ. Because they want to be pure. Now, since wrongdoers do not have any acceptable logic before the divine prophets, they always stick to force. They use force against them. Now, you may remember the former discussions with the strong logic of Lut, the divine prophet, in front of those polluted people explained that how he actually dissuaded them from the hideous act of sodomy by his reasonable and eloquent statement. He showed them that this act is the consequence of their ignorance. He showed them, he taught them, he reminded them the fact that they know how indecent this act is, yet they continue doing it. So, they were unaware of the law of creation and all human values. What kinds of animals can you find in the whole world to do such indecent act? Even today, dear listeners, we have many countries who have accepted this action as something lawful, but they do not pay attention to this fact that this is against the law of creation. It is against the law of whole universe. What kinds of animals, what kinds of insects, what kinds can you find that they do this indecent act? It is useless. So now we will see the answer of this polluted nation to the logical statement of Prophet Lut.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin.
محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
So the Holy Quran says that the answer of this polluted nation to the logical statement of Prophet Lut is this: فَمَا كَانَ جَوَابَ قَوْمِهِ إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا. The answer of his people was not, except that they said. This means that they didn't have anything at their disposal. They didn't know anything to answer with. They did not have anything to answer with, and they did not know anything in this regard, except force. إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا. أَخْرِجُوا آلَ لُوطٍ مِّن قَرْيَتِكُمْ. Drive out the people of Lut from your city. This answer is an implication to the low level of their thought. This shows how extraordinary they will fell of their ethical affairs. This shows that they not only wanted Prophet Lut to be exempted from their society, but also the people of Lut as well. آلَ لُوطٍ مِّن قَرْيَتِكُمْ. So, yes, in the environment of polluted ones, chastity is a crime and defect. So they want all of these people to be driven out of their society. And it is really interesting that they mention why we need to drive them out. إِنَّهُمْ أُنَاسٌ يَتَطَهَّرُونَ. The chaste and the modest ones are to be driven out. They have to be driven out because they are the people who seek to be pure. So the chaste and modest ones, like Prophet Yusuf, are put in prison. And the household of the Divine Prophet, because of their chastity and avoidance from pollution, those are the ones who are banished. While the people like Zulaykha are free and they possess ranks. This is the nature of this world, dear listeners. This is the nature of polluted water. This is the nature of flood. As the Holy Quran says, there are some floods that you may see in the earth. But above water, something is hiding and something is covering the water. It is like a foam. It covers water, but it has nothing inside it. This is the nature of batil. It stays on top, but it will diminish. We'll discuss more in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Ursula von der Leyen kept her top job in the European Commission on Thursday after a vote in the European Parliament. However, she was slated by a sizeable minority in the chamber, with some even claiming she should be in prison. She was accused of greenlighting genocide in Gaza and of blatant double standards by not showing the same support to Palestinians as she does to Ukrainians.
40,000 civilians slaughtered, children burned alive in their tents, and still no
Thank
consequences.
You.
Colleagues, today, say no to genocide and say no to von der Leyen.
Von der Leyen was asked why she does not support peace in Ukraine after she intensified her criticism of Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban's recent visit to Moscow.
This so-called peace mission was nothing but an appeasement mission. This was a plain appeasement mission.
The European Commission wields huge power in the EU, and von der Leyen's policies of allocating billions to arm Ukraine while citizens at home face financial hardship have attracted substantial criticism. On Thursday, millions of tracker mortgage holders in the Eurozone received more bad news as the European Central Bank maintained interest rates, citing insufficient progress in reducing inflation.
Inflation is expected to fluctuate around current levels for the rest of this year, partly owing to energy-related base effects.
Those managing to stay in business say an increasing number of companies in the EU are declaring bankruptcy.
That will only accelerate as businesses that were already close to the edge will now find nowhere else to go, only bankruptcy, because there's no end in sight, really, for inflation as it stands.
The financial strain is compounded by stagnant wages and the lingering economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. Families across the EU are faced with difficult choices, cutting back on necessities and dipping into savings to cover basic expenses. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
In the middle of this genocidal war and the ongoing Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip, suffering is increasingly unfolding. Today we are here to present the story of Mortaz Abudayya. Mortaz led an initiative to help the people around him who are struggling with the amputations they sustained by the Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip. The initiative of this young physiotherapist relies heavily on his volunteer efforts to rehabilitate the amputated limb for the future journey of recovery. What makes this initiative particularly impactful is the deep sense of solidarity it fosters within the community. Mortaz does not only contribute his time and skills, but also provides emotional support to the recipients who are grappling with the trauma of losing a limb in a war zone.
Actually, this initiative is about providing the service of physiotherapy. According to the current circumstances in the Gaza Strip due to this genocidal war and the lack of resources and rehabilitation and physiotherapy centers, I chose to help the injured people with amputations in my area.
In the wake of the complete absence of rehabilitation centers in the Gaza Strip by the Israeli bombing, this man is in urgent need for help. He finds his relief in Mortaz's initiative. This man is trying to cope with the unbearable conditions of life after losing his home. He's also struggling to find water, food, and medications for him and for his family.
I lost both of my legs and my arm is fractured. It is hard for me to move and meet my family's needs, so I appeal to everyone in the world to support my right to a dignified life with my family. The initiative of Dr. Mortaz is very good for the injured people, in the displacement centers particularly.
As we have just seen, this story of suffering is one of thousands. A lot of Palestinians inside these evacuation camps are still suffering and struggling. However, the suffering is multiplied when the person is amputated. This initiative led by Mortaz is trying to reach for the global community and trying to raise awareness about the circumstances of the Palestinian amputated people. Ghada Zabut, the middle area of the Gaza Strip.
They've come out in their thousands, standing shoulder to shoulder in a line that snaked around the Parliament building as MPs sit for the first day of debate since the general election.
We've been calling for a ceasefire since October, and we're demanding a ceasefire, and it's many months down the line, and many thousands of people have been murdered.
It's the second protest since the Labour government swept to power in a general election earlier this month. An unbreakable human chain calling on Prime Minister Keir Starmer to pressure Israel to agree to a ceasefire and end its genocidal assault on Palestinians.
And for that to happen, this former Labour Party leader believes there are immediate measures the British government must take.
One, stop arms supplies to Israel. Two, demand a ceasefire. Three, stop the use of RAF Akrotiri to take material through. And four, demand the end of the occupation and abide by international law from the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice.
Despite his call for an immediate ceasefire, there was special fury here at new Foreign Minister David Lammy and his recent meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister.
Got the day before he went, Israel bombed Al-Mawasi refugee camp. It killed over 90 Palestinians. Now, he didn't even comment on that. Not a comment. 90 Palestinians, most of them women and children, blown to pieces, their arms and legs scattered around Al-Mawasi refugee camp. Why would he not publicly address that?
As of May this year, more than 70% of Britons want to see an end to the genocide in Gaza, and many back a pause in arms sales to Israel. There have been 9 months of protests demanding the UK government stop its complicity in genocide. That demand has gone unheeded so far. The question now is, how long can the new government ignore it? Saeed Pourreza, London.
Once again, we are in Al-Nusayra refugee camp, covering another horrifying massacre that was committed over the last night against Hamad family. We have Hamad family house that was completely destroyed after the Israeli warplanes targeted the house over the heads of the family, over the heads of the people who were taking shelter inside that house. 11 Palestinian civilians, including 5 children, were slaughtered in this house while they were sleeping. It is another massacre added to the ongoing and the non-stop attacks against the central area of Gaza Strip generally and Al-Nusayra refugee camp particularly. Let's find out more details about what happened here over the last night, having this interview with this eyewitness.
The women were sitting over here. All of a sudden, an Israeli missile hit the place. The children were playing. We found their bodies torn into pieces. They were all civilians. 5 children and 3 women were killed without any reason. I am speechless. All the Gaza Strip is sentenced to death.
The current situation, whenever there is any kind of any attacks against the residential buildings, the Israeli occupation forces leave massive destruction and wide-scale damage and ruin in those residential buildings. In all areas of Gaza Strip, they are still insisting on targeting and destroying. Let's have another eyewitness in order to have more details about what happened in this massacre over the last night.
We are not affiliated with any faction. We're all civilians. I lost my 2 sons, my uncles and my cousins. They were turned into pieces. What was their crime? I was preparing the milk for my children when they were killed before they could even drink it. The missile targeted them directly.
This is the real manifestation of the ongoing Israeli brutality against the Palestinian people. Whenever there is any kind of any attack against the Palestinian residential buildings and areas, we have this kind of this misery. And the Palestinian people are completely devastated with these ongoing atrocities being committed day and night against the Palestinian people. Tabu Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Syrian citizens flocked to the polls on Monday to participate in elections for the 4th legislature following the 2012 constitutional amendments. Voting stations opened at 7 a.m. and remained open until 7 p.m. President Assad and senior Syrian figures participated in this election. emphasizing their commitment to taking responsibility for the country's future.
The parliamentary elections, along with the presidential and local council elections, were organized smoothly and on time, demonstrating that we are a nation governed by institutions. Syria is entering a new phase of openness, requiring citizens to play a role in shaping the country's policies while moving forward. We are hopeful that the new parliament will fulfill its responsibilities.
A total of 1,516 candidates competed for the 250 seats in the Syrian parliament. Citizens viewed these elections as an opportunity to shape the country's future by electing representatives who would address their needs and aspirations.
We opened at 7 in the morning with representatives of all candidates present to ensure transparency. Voter turnout has been good so far, and we expect it to increase throughout the day. We are providing all necessary facilities to citizens in collaboration with relevant authorities.
With high hopes for their country's future, Syrians demonstrated a strong sense of responsibility through widespread participation, signifying a positive step towards recovery in the Arab nation.
Let's hope that our elected representatives fulfill the promises outlined in their electoral programs and help our country overcome the economic challenges. The reconstruction of Syria is a top priority for all Syrians.
Participating in these elections is a duty regarding my country. I'm voting for those who will work for the betterment of the people's conditions and fulfill our aspirations, particularly in improving the economic situation. I hope the candidate who truly serves the country's best interests wins.
These elections took place amidst a positive atmosphere, fueled by the gradual opening that Syria is experiencing in various areas, paving the way for a return to normalcy. Experts believe the next parliament will play a significant role in shaping the country's future and setting its course for the next phase. Syrians are not only exercising their national rights and duty by voting in these elections, they are also showing the entire world that they can decide their fate and make a difference with their votes through democratic means. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Rights campaigners are convinced that Israel is committing genocide and ethnic cleansing against Palestinians, actions blatantly supported by the United States and many EU nations. The death toll in Gaza continues to soar. People are starving and deprived of the most basic health care.
It's about an ideology, a Zionist ideology that was imported from Europe into our country, our own country of Palestine. And that ideology, its aim, I believe, in my own personal opinion, and it's been proven and it's been shown the case that they are trying to eliminate the Palestinian people and the Palestinian culture and history from all of the land of Palestine.
On Monday, after he met his Jordanian counterparts in Brussels, the EU's top diplomat, Joseph Borrell, again spoke out about the situation facing Palestinians.
I want to express my utter dismay over the unbearable climbing human cost and wide-scale destruction caused in Gaza by this conflict.
That's just the problem for EU policy critics. Instead of empty words, they are demanding economic sanctions and an arms embargo to be placed on the Israeli government. Additionally, the EU has been called upon to clarify its new plans to address the humanitarian crisis in Gaza.
We are looking at the possibility of facilitating medical evacuations jointly with member states and the WHO from the Gaza Strip to third or neighbouring countries in the region.
That response has been described as pitiful by those desperate to see adequate international support for dying Palestinians.
Europe stands with Israel.
European Commission boss Ursula von der Leyen set the tone for the EU when she travelled to Israel last October at the launch of Netanyahu's latest massacre. The EU's response, or lack thereof, to the atrocities has seriously undermined the bloc's credibility in the eyes of many. The question is being asked, is there literally no limit to what Israel can do before it faces consequences from the West? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
(laughs) It's been 9 years since the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, also known as the Iran Deal, was signed between Iran and several world powers in the Austrian capital, Vienna. The signatories to the 2015 landmark agreement were China, France, Germany, Russia, and the United Kingdom, apart from Iran and the United States. Under the agreement, the U.S. and the EU agreed to remove anti-Iran sanctions imposed over the years in exchange for Iran limiting its uranium enrichment and reducing its existing stockpile. The deal was eventually violated by the U.S. during the administration of President Donald Trump, who pulled out his country from the deal. That despite, Iran fully adhered to its part of the obligation under the JCPOA. Europeans also failed to salvage the accord by not complying to the accord.
The JCPOA had its pluses and its minuses. The biggest problem was that it was not protected. In other words, there were no real mechanisms to protect the deal if the Americans or the Europeans violated the agreement. And so when Obama began violating the deal, when he began to increase the sanctions, and of course the Europeans always obey the United States, there was no punishment. They paid no price for these violations. And then, of course, when Trump ultimately tore up the deal, it came at no political or economic cost for the United States.
The JCPOA was a result of 20 months marathon negotiations between the diplomats from Iran, the U.S., European countries, as well as China and Russia. These negotiations first led to the Interim Joint Plan of Action, concluded in 2013 in Geneva, then a framework agreement concluded in April 2015 in Lausanne, and finally, on July 14, 2015 in Vienna, it was announced that the final agreement has been clinched.
If you think about the guarantee of the JCPOA, it is important to notice that there is no way in international relations that finally force them states to obey a regulation or a deal or a treaty among them. And that is why every party can withdraw illegally but practically from a deal, and that is why JCPOA was not the only treaty or was not the only deal that United States withdrew during Trump era and other times. Trump withdrew from Paris Agreement, from NAFTA, from the deal with Russia, from the tariff deal with China, and some others, many others.
Over the next 2 years, following the signing of the deal, while Iran fully complied with the terms of the agreement, the unreliability of Americans was clear as they looked for pretext to scale back their commitments. However, with Trump coming to the White House, as known for his close affiliation with the Israeli regime, the stage was set for nixing the accord. On May 8, 2018, Trump issued an executive order announcing that he was withdrawing the U.S. from the JCPOA. Trump's unilateral move virtually led to the collapse of the implementation of key provisions of the JCPOA, as the two main parties to the agreement were Iran and the U.S. Despite the U.S.'s withdrawal, Iran decided to remain a signatory to the agreement with the remaining parties, but with implementation of reciprocal measures in line with its parliamentary law. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how Imam Hussein alayhi salam teaches us to find strength in community. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here at your service. We are talking about the martyrdom
and the mission of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he teaches us to find strength in community. We find that there were approximately 72 martyrs that were with Imam Hussein alayhi salam on the day of Ashura in the year 61 after Hijri. These 72 companions, faithful, loyal, noble companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, along with the family members and the relatives that were with His Eminence, the third divinely appointed Imam, were a small community, a community of believers who were a source of strength for one another. It was this community together, brothers and sisters in arms, if you will, that gave each other strength, gave each other hope, gave each other power, strength and hope and power that was able to overcome and defeat forces that were in the thousands and a tyrannical government as powerful as that of Yazid. It was this community that helped and supported one another that even though the apparent battle was lost, but the spiritual battle was won for eternity.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. We're talking about how Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he teaches us how to find strength in community. We talked about how the 72 martyrs that were with Imam Hussein alayhi salam on the day of Ashura in the year 61 after Hijri, along with the family members and the relatives that were with His Eminence, were a small community, and they were a community which gave each other strength, hope, and power. This is the role of a community wherever a community is. A community in our communities, if you will, in our societies, us gathering together, commemorating the martyrdom and the mission of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, this too brings power and strength and unity. It is a support system which helps us to overcome the various challenges that might be too difficult to overcome on an individual level. And this is therefore the perspective that we must have about our community. Our communities must be these support systems, these centers, these places where people who are in need, who want help, who are seeking help, who are facing some kind of a problem or a tribulation or a difficulty, these people can come to this community and find strength and hope. This idea that we come and we are disconnected from one another, even in our communities, is something that is contrary to the teachings of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. As a community, we must find ways to strengthen one another, give power to one another, and bring hope to one another.
The horizon, the source we're waiting for here.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
But anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. Silence, fill the air.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Welcome to this week's edition of Africa.